All right, everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Liberty Lands. I am your host, Big John, and joining me today, I don't know if this is a compliment or not, but perhaps a Washington insider fresh off a trip to help, to attend the nomination hearings, I guess, for RFK for HHS. So, man, I feel so tingly having an insider. Unless, of course, you're one of these guys that wants to drain the swamp, in which case you probably view me as dirty now. So I don't know which way this goes, but we'll take either way. He's my friend. He's my co-host, Mr. Mike Termont. Mike, how are you doing today?
Good. It's great to be with you. It was a pleasure to be in Washington. I don't get to Washington very often these days. It's 2.5 hours from my house, so it has to be rather intentional. And it is true. You know, I spent a couple of years working for the White House and a couple of other years working for a variety of agencies. And I spent a decade lobbying, or at least supporting lobbyists and lobbying efforts on behalf of free markets and deregulation. But it's been a long time since anyone called me a Washington insider. So again, I don't know whether that's a compliment or not, but it was interesting to be back in the Senate office building once again and to see the hearings in action. I thought that the senators on both sides of the Kennedy debate took whatever opportunity they had to look just slightly silly and dopey and over the top, whatever direction, you know, they were trying to go in. I think that they probably could have done it in a more articulate fashion. And I thought that Kennedy availed himself pretty well. Of course, you know, we have enormous overlapping interests. And so I'm kind of rooting for him to do the things that we as libertarians want him to do,
right,
namely get rid of the biases in research and the deep conflicts of interest that are widespread in HHS. If he can do that, then he's got my support.
And we, for those of you who haven't been following us, we did do a segment on this. So go check it out. Go back to YouTube. Check out our past clips. There is a clip dedicated specifically to Mike's thoughts on the RFK nomination. But for today, I just want to say, let's talk about something that's all a buzz in the news, Mike. And that is the immigration situation in the United States, especially the fact that Donald Trump, love him or hate him for this, has started to keep his promises. We're seeing deportations. I don't know if mass deportations is the right phrase, depending on what you mean, but they're certainly more high profile. We're already, as libertarians, we're seeing some concerning things, right? We're seeing roundups in places of employment, in schools. Again, I've heard this, but I haven't verified it, in places of worship. And then, even more disconcerting, Mike, we're hearing about Guantanamo Bay being used to house illegal immigrants pending adjudication, or I don't know if it's just they plan on keeping them there for a while. So there's a lot to unwrap here just in this short week since we last spoke. So go ahead, turning it over to you.
There is a lot to unpack, and to work backwards, I really believe that the Guantanamo Bay reference was a mistake on one level or another, and maybe on every level imaginable. I wish that the president would leave that alone and not revisit it. I can't imagine the White House actually walking it back and saying, we made a mistake, never mind. That's probably not – that's not in the DNA of this administration. But if they could just leave it alone, the use of Guantanamo Bay is, of course, specific to doing things that courts in the United States just would not tolerate. And for this reason alone, we should be closing the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. By the way, the idea of holding a base inside of another nation that doesn't want us there is problematic per se, but we're not focused on that. That's another episode.
That's a separate issue, yeah.
Using that as a detention facility is really a fundamentally profound bad idea. It's explicitly in contravention of our Constitution, which is supposed to limit what it is that our government can do And for that, we recognize it stands up for our rights, but it is not intended to suggest that the government has carte blanche to do whatever it wants to people who are not citizens, right? That's not the way that this works. So that rolls us into immigration more generally. I believe that the White House has some challenges that it needs to smooth out, however you feel about immigration. It has some real communications challenges here. And this is one of those issues where the communication really matters a lot. Right. Now, I think that we would argue, not just as libertarians, but as modern observers of policy, that communications always matter, right? But one might argue that, you know, if you issued a regulation in securities disclosures and you got the communication wrong in the first week, you're going to catch up pretty quick and smooth things over, right? That's right. Not a problem that 100 phone calls can't fix.
Right. Exactly.
This, however, is not that. This has to be communicated correctly the first time, repeatedly, and effectively. And we don't see that coming out of the White House regarding immigration right now. Starting with the basic philosophy, and I recognize, I think you and I would probably agree that the White House and we as libertarians don't see this issue completely eye to eye, right? Right. And, you know, I almost want to say, you know, we're going to have to set that aside for just a moment. I'm not sure that President Trump would disagree with a lot that I'm going to say today. But I wish that he would say that. And I wish he would say what it is that he does believe differently. So, for starting with the fact that my campaign's mantra has always been that legal immigration is good for America, even though illegal immigration is bad for America and for a variety of reasons. And I wish that President Trump would say the first half of that once in a while, that legal immigration, right, when immigration is done right, it's good for us. It's good for us culturally and economically and even financially. To bring people in who pay more in taxes than they take out, which is the way it works for illegal immigrants. It's just an arithmetic fact that it's actually good for the balance of payments with the federal government and with state governments. And, you know, as libertarians, we recognize it's good for us culturally and economically. It's not a bad thing to say. It's one of those things that differentiates us from other modern democracies. It's what makes America, has literally made America what it is, right?
Yes. And Mike, let me, to your point about communicating his intent, right? So I think people of reasonable people and people of good conscience can argue the finer points of immigration policy. Should there be a limit on the number of legal immigrants? How many legal points of entry should we have? What do you do with people you find here who got here illegally but have not committed crimes and are living productive lives within these borders? I think we could have reasoned discussions about that. But communications-wise, for example, the invocation of Guantanamo Bay, the constant referral to immigration from the South especially being an invasion. There's a lot of people who have suggested this language and this consistent use of military draped phrases is specifically to try to invoke certain clauses in the Constitution pertaining to wartime powers, both for the executive, for the president, and for governors of states, that when you have an illegal occupying force, an invasion in your state, you don't need the whole country to act. The governor can, in essence, declare war against that occupying malevolent force in your state. So do you feel that this is very purposeful, that this language, even after the campaign, even if you argued it was a campaign rhetoric, but now he's in office, he's still using the same rhetoric?
Yeah.
Do you feel that that's part of this sort of administration's
I don't know. Position? I have seen this question. I don't know the answer to it, and I'd like to defer it to future adjudication. I think it is also true that the Trump White House is very much like the Obama White House in the sense that there's no such thing as campaign mode and governance mode. It's all campaign mode.
Right.
Right. And you're right. The rhetoric hasn't been very much different. I just wish the rhetoric were more tempered. Exactly why it hasn't been could be, you know, what you said. It could be other reasons that they just believe this is the best way to maintain the political momentum that they had coming through the election. That may well be. But the absence of recognition of the favorability, philosophically speaking, of immigration, I think is a downside risk to garnering even more support than the president has already earned. I think that he could mitigate some of the harshest rhetoric coming from the left and some of the harsher rhetoric coming from beyond our borders, which politically is probably less important, but not completely unimportant, if he would say something positive once in a while about immigration. Now, having said that, the American people are on board with the idea that there should be some vetting. And the moment you cross from a completely open borders policy, and there are people who believe in such a thing, but the moment you give that up and say there should be some vetting, any vetting whatsoever,
right,
that necessarily means you need to gain control over the border. Right. And so in that sense, it should not have been so difficult for Trump to make the case that we need to control the border. You know, this is something that the Biden administration really screwed up.
Right.
Because they didn't want to take control of the border because they thought that that was a political hot potato. And the truth of the matter is that the entire country is behind the idea. We're just debating about what to do after you get control over it. So to your point about the militaristic language, it does make it easier to send the troops to the border, right? To your point. But the Biden administration, having let this go for so long, that I think the American people would have been behind the idea of sending troops to the border anyway. I think the American people are going to tolerate building a wall. I think that the right. American people are going to tolerate spending money on technology at the border. You know, Chase Oliver has always said that he supports an Ellis Island approach to immigration, right?
Right.
I love that language because it definitely implies exactly what we all say, which is if there isn't a specific reason why you should not be allowed in the United States, we welcome you in.
Right.
But that implies that you have control over the border.
Yes,
so you can get there without using the harsh rhetoric.
And I think that's the key, right? Because to your point, if you're not an open borders advocate, which many libertarians are, let's face it, if you make the argument that, okay, all I want to make sure is we're not letting in murderers and thieves and people with communicable diseases, at least to the point where we make sure they're not communicable anymore.
Even we just if we make put, sure we're not letting people in like John and Mike, right?
Exactly, right. To your point, you've said, okay, so you agree you have to control the border somehow, whether it's 1,000 Ellis Islands like Chase used to say during the campaign, which I happen to agree with. And unlike, say, Jacob Hornberger, again, someone that I like and enjoy talking to, he said, I live in Texas. I never lost a night's sleep over one illegal immigrant coming into this country. He's an open borders guy.
Right.
So somewhere between Jacob and ourselves is probably where you'd find certainly the overwhelming majority, I think, of libertarians. But when you combine, again, the president's reluctance to highlight any positive aspects of immigration, and now combine that with other language. I want to end birthright citizenship. Everything's an invasion. The images of ICE agents raiding homes, schools, churches, mosques, whatever. For a libertarian, especially, Mike, this is the beginning of some dystopian novel, right? This is the beginning of the authoritarian government clamping down, right? Isn't it?
And imagine how much easier this would go down if the language surrounding it were different, even if the actions were exactly the same. And I think that necessarily needs to bring us to a more practical aspect of this, which is the prioritization of who is being deported.
Right.
As a practical matter, I think it is true that the White House would like people who are actual criminals to be deported first. That's where the resources should be. My understanding is that there are over 1 million people in the United States who have already been adjudicated to have a deportation order. That's a lot, right? That's a lot. If you did nothing but deported people whom the courts have already ordered out of the United States because there's a crime involved,
right?
I don't think a lot of Americans are going to give you a hard time about that.
I agree with you on that. Yeah,
and so it would be easy for the White House to take that as a win, right? And
you would think, yeah.
Even if it were the case that the White House wanted to deport 20 million people, and I don't see any reason to believe that the White House does, but even if you did, you would start with these 1 million and take the political win that is going to come with having done that in a way that doesn't undermine your fundamental message. And so I think that prioritization is really part of the politics and part of the communication. And I think that there's been a miss. And by the way, I think that the White House had a real communications miss the other day when the press secretary was asked point blank, are you just going after the deportation of people who are criminals? And she said, if you're in this nation illegally, you are by definition a criminal. Well, number one, that's not true.
Right. It's not
number
accurate.
Two, it's nothing anybody wants to hear. Number three, you don't have the resources to go after everybody. Don't be silly about not being able to discern between the difference, not just the political difference, but the practical difference, both financially and culturally in terms of crime, between deporting someone who's been here 20 years and is, you know, working and raising a family, and someone who is raising havoc in an apartment complex caught on some video camera in Missouri, right? Don't tell me you can't tell the difference.
Well, I think this blanket, because I see this a lot from my Republican friends who will always argue with me, John, we have nothing against legal immigration, but we're talking about illegal immigration. And much like the press secretary said, if they're here illegally, they're criminals de facto. So just get rid of them. They're criminals by definition. And I always say to them, I said, if that's your framework, then I never want to hear a complaint about some, quote, leftist law that you have to follow. I don't want to hear complaints if someone says you are forced to use someone's preferred pronouns that you disagree with. I don't want to hear anything like that, which, of course, now they're, you know, you see the difference. You see the logical conundrum you're in, right? Like sometimes laws are wrong and we should speak out against them. And as libertarians, these are people. I don't care if they're U.S. citizens or not. They're people. They have human rights. And to your point, Mike, people say, I would kill for my children. If someone threatened my children, I would kill. I would not hesitate to kill to protect my children. You're saying you want someone to hesitate crossing an imaginary line to feed their children, to get their children an education, or to get children the medication they need. And I find the logic that you must twist yourself to hold both positions concurrently to be particularly ironic.
You and I have said on your show before, yeah, we would absolutely climb that wall if it meant building a better life for our families. There's absolutely no question about that. You and I would stand on each other's shoulders and hoist each other up to get our families over that wall, which brings, I think, another really interesting point that I think the Trump administration is missing a bet here. Consider the following question. Whose fault is it that we have so many illegal immigrants. Is it really the fault of the people who are crossing that line? Because they're doing exactly what you and I would do. I think they're doing exactly what the Trump family would do. I'm not suggesting that when that family immigrated to the United States, they did it legally or illegally. I have no idea, right?
Right.
I understand that my family came legally, but I know there are people in my family who would have come illegally if they had the opportunity to do so. And so at some point, you've got to say it's human nature.
Yes.
And that a piece of the responsibility must be borne by the government that did not control the border. If you don't control the border, right, if you don't close your windows, there is going to be heat exchange between the outside world and your home. That's just the way it works. And so at some point, you've got to say the federal government of the United States bears some responsibility. That doesn't mean, in my humble opinion,
right,
that we need to provide resources to folks who come into the United States. It doesn't mean we owe them a free bed or a free meal even.
Right.
But it does mean that you've got to recognize that differentiated treatment based on the behavior of people after they are here in the country is warranted. And saying that people who are here illegally and therefore are criminals not only misses that philosophically, but it's technically incorrect. They are not criminals. It is not a crime to overstay your visa. It is not a crime to enter the country illegally, unless you've already been deported once, in which case it is a crime. And so it's just a silly statement on any number of levels. And I think that the administration has been done a disservice by this language.
And the fact that they continue to pursue it to me is a little baffling because, listen, there's a certain – we would be lying to ourselves and to our audience if we didn't admit that there's a percentage of people supporting these deportations. I'm not even going to limit it to Trump supporters, but there's a number of people who support these deportations to whom there is no distinction, right? They're illegals. You got to get them out of here, right? There's a certain percentage of those people.
Sure.
But there's a bigger percentage of people, I think, that are interested in the distinction that you are making. And the overall concept that this country, as much as Americans think is dysfunctional, is still somewhere that there's a large number of people on this planet that would rather be here than where they are now. And if you think about it, what kind of immigrants do we want? Do we want rich, well-to-do immigrants? The second they set foot here, they're living on Park Avenue or on Rodeo Drive. They don't give two craps about me or you, Mike, because we're way below their pay grade. Or do we want the people who are so desperate to make a better life for themselves, so desperate to feed their families, that they're willing to swim across rivers?
We want that hardworking, entrepreneurially spirited, son of a bitch who will do anything to climb that damned wall.
Right. Or wherever, right? We're focusing on the southern border.
Run the mountain, whatever it takes. Drag the donkey. Carry his kids.
There you go.
You know, they're going to do whatever it takes.
I was always moved by these occasional stories where you find some immigrants from, say, Europe or Africa who were hiding in the wheel wells of commercial airliners in order to come to them. You know,
By the way, this is not advice. I need to interrupt your show with a public service announcement. Don't do that.
Because you end up dead. But the point is that every so often it was almost like a sick joke. At JFK here in New York, our international airport, once or twice a year, a plane would land, the landing gear would come down, and a body would fall out. And it's a disturbing image, but it's also kind of – it reinforces the lengths to which this country is still a beacon for the rest of the world. And I think when you have language that says we don't – no, sorry. No more admissions. Sorry, you can't come here. Get online. It might take you 20 years. Get online. I think that's also on us. Now, to your point, do we need to provide assistance? Do we need to provide social services and all that? No, but that should apply to everybody. And I think in this country, we should try to reform the government, its spending. As libertarians or as Austrian economists, we would say, definitely, like, let's cut down this nonsense. But then the free market would automatically take care of your immigration problem if there exists, right?
And it would still be the greatest nation on earth, and it would still be a place that you wanted to come to. But you would know that the people who are coming were not coming for a handout. Right now, one of the problems communication-wise is you have any number of people inside the United States who believe, rightly or wrongly, I believe in the main, incorrectly, that there are some people coming in the United States for a handout. And I suppose there are once in a while such a person, but not in the main. People want to come here to work. And if we cut down on these programs that give away the free money, it would eliminate a little bit some of the skepticism of the motivation of people who want to come here. So I do think that the administration is going to get its way. I think that it would get its way in a more expedited fashion if it cleaned up the rhetoric and cleaned up the communication a little bit. Here's another example. You don't have to say we're going to prosecute people who are in public administration at the local level who don't help us out. Now, that is not exactly what the White House said, but that's what a lot of people heard, right? The administration is basically saying if you break the law and get in our way, you could be prosecuted for breaking the law. They didn't, in that sense, what they said is really not that interesting, but the fact that they chose to say it is what made it so interesting. Of course, if you break the law in a criminal fashion, you could be subject to criminal prosecution. Right. That doesn't need to be said. Why would you choose to say it now? At this point, you really need to focus on what it is that everyone agrees with, which is we do need to get control of the border. We do have people in the United States who nobody wants to have here, and we want your help deporting them. In an area where it's so important to leverage the resources of local law enforcement, remember, federal agencies do not have the resources to get this done on their own.
Right.
Do not. This is one of those areas, and they cannot compel local agencies. You know, local agencies that don't want to cooperate with you are not breaking criminal statute. Now, one could argue they're being nasty sticks in mud, but that's not the same thing as breaking criminal statute. That just means the sheriff, you know, is doing something political that is not in line with how you see politics, right?
Right.
And you can jump up and down and wave your arms over your head, but that sheriff or that local police department, they're not going to be more inclined to help you out because you're out there saying we want to prosecute people.
Right, well, that's akin to prosecutorial discretion, right? Like how DAs can cut one defendant a deal and send the other one to jail, right? It's up to them. And the fairness of that can be debated, but it's existed. It's not anything that's being done specifically against Trump per se. But this might be the final point, but what do you think of potentially the use of armed forces, the army, say, the National Guard, going to the imagery, because we haven't had that maybe since Selma or the desegregation.
Yeah.
Universities in the 60s.
Yeah, as a philosophical matter, it doesn't bother me nearly as much as it does as a practical matter. As a philosophical matter, they are resources. They are resources I frankly wish were not part of the overspending on personnel in the Defense Department. That's a whole nother podcast you and I should talk about.
Sure.
But given that that's a resource and given that we do want to control the border, I get the logic there. Philosophically, that doesn't bother. What bothers me is having worked as a cop for a dozen years, I've learned the hard way that dealing with folks who are in tough situations, who are upset, right? Potentially desperate, in large groups, that is a very difficult assignment. And groups of people, let me remind everyone, are not criminals. Okay? This is a very difficult assignment. This is a very different assignment than for which troops are trained. So again, it's a matter of communication. If it were me, what I would have done is said, we're going to take troops and retrain, you know, a new battalion, right? We're going to train them, different patch.
Right.
Different color, something somewhere, so that the public sees that this is a differently trained individual to handle this particular problem, which would give you the opportunity to say, and here's what's going to be part of the training, because we do not want to create violence at the border. We do not want people getting hurt. We want to cut down on illegal immigration. And here's why. Illegal immigration fosters human trafficking. So these people are going to be trained in identifying human trafficking and interceding.
Right.
We do not want bad, fraudulent, dangerous drugs being brought across our border. So these people are going to be trained in interdicting that. We do not want people rushing the border in these very dangerous places and putting themselves in harm's way. And so these people are going to be specifically trained in how to help people stay safe and preventing them from crossing the border in these very dangerous situations. Imagine a communications win.
Right.
If you were to put yourself in a situation where you could discuss all of that, right? And at the same time, use the same resource, it wouldn't cost you all that much, right? You know, you're talking about what, a 6-week training program. You take these young women and men who are probably going to volunteer for it. It's right. Excellent training for them, especially if they want to transition to law enforcement in their future, or, you know, tell them you're going to pay for their first year of law school or something if they volunteer for this program. You're going to get people who are motivated to do a good job for you rather than an untrained GI on the border who has never seen a situation like this and probably is not as prepared as you would wish.
Let's face it, quick on the trigger, too, in that situation, because that's what they've been trained to do. So.
Well, and because, you know, quick triggers are the result of fear, a lack of training,
right?
Not knowing what's going to happen next, and right. Being told that these people are criminals, which is just absolutely untrue. You're enforcing a civil code because this nation wishes that border to be under control. Here's your training. Now go help us out. That should be the attitude.
And I understand what you just said, and I guess I could agree with that. One, I was referring a little more, though, about the optics around, say, the Army or the National Guard going into a restaurant to get five people.
In the United States.
Within the borders, yeah. The optics of that.
That's an even more difficult assignment, because the training there has to be rather specific. Not only, you know, in some cases, there are battalions of GIs who are well trained in clearing houses, right? Right. But this is not that. Right. Take it from someone who's had to, you know, go into a lot of places carefully, but as a police officer, you have to be careful. Yes, of your own safety and the safety of your coworkers, absolutely, but also the safety of everyone who's in that that building, right? For a variety of reasons. Sure. You do not want to startle them into lawfully brandishing a weapon in self-defense.
Right.
This is how we get into trouble so often, which is why I've always been a big advocate of getting rid of no-knock warrants, for example. You know, you should not be, the only time I ever kicked in a door was trying to, you know, prevent a suicide, right? And that was because, you know, we were given credible information that this is happening right now.
Right now, right.
And that's a very different sense that the law is set up to handle. But our laws do not tolerate, and I believe should not tolerate, violation of residences and businesses in order to, you know, handle these deportation orders. Those are things for which you can wait on the exterior. If this is really that important, you can wait outside the building, right?
Right.
You know, if they're inside, they're not committing another violent crime. This is a very sensitive set of issues. I would be very concerned about sending in relatively lightly trained GIs, lightly trained in these particular areas.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially for the safety issue. And as you said, for the most part, unless like you're going after these gangs, like you said, these like gangs of illegal immigrants who are taking over buildings, who are attacking people, who are, you know, I'm putting those aside. And even those, I would say, are better suited for law enforcement, local law enforcement, right? But I'm talking about just like an Elian Gonzalez type of situation where you've got a kid terrified in a closet with a rifle in his face, you know? Like for those of us old enough to remember those images happening in real time.
What a mess.
What a mess. Nobody comes out ahead in that, right? And there is a concern that, especially with someone like Holman, because, you know, he gets on screen, he looks like someone who would be a problem. I'm not saying he is, but the image he portrays is someone you don't want to cross. If you ever ran across him in a bar or something, you would.
Right. You better hope he's on your side in a bar fight.
Exactly. You would walk around him and just avoid it entirely. And I'm a big guy myself, Mike, and I would avoid him like every chance I got. So to have somebody like that also deliver your message. And the like, I saw one that was almost chilling. I'm sure it was a pre-thing where he said, someone asked him, a reporter said, are you really planning to break up families to enforce this deportation? He goes, not really. I can deport entire families. I get the logic and I understand what he was trying to say. Coming from him with absolutely no sense of padding or anything, it was chilling. You know, like, yep. Like he didn't care and he wasn't going to care. He had a job to do. And I know some people find that comforting and they find that a positive, but I have to tell you, I saw that and I'm like, oh man, I mean, I understand.
I know. I think you can get to where you want to be. I think the administration can have its cake and eat it too. I think you can get there with language that sounds a lot more like, you know what, we're going to do everything possible to avoid breaking up a family. That gives you the opportunity to immediately launch into why.
Right.
Because that would be un-American, because that does not fit with our values. That's not, you know, the objective here. The objective is to keep people safe. It's a pro-family orientation from which this administration operates. So, no, we don't want to break up families. We're going to do everything we possibly can to keep families together. We're going to come up with a menu of options, right? You know, if a member of your family is under a deportation order, we can talk about maybe the family, you know, wants to return together. Maybe there's a third country that they want to go to together. Maybe there's, you know, I don't know all the answers, but neither does the guy with the microphone in his face. All he's got to do is say, we're going to work at this. We've got options. You know, maybe we cut a deal of some, I don't know, right? But the answer can't be, yeah, suck it up, buttercup.
Which is the impression you get from that particular interview that I saw. But like I said, and it's through no fault of his own. The guy just looks like a problem. Some people look tough. And they can say, I love you. And when they say, I love you, you get a chill going down your spine of terror, right?
Right. You better say, I love you back or you get punched in the face. I get it.
Exactly. All right. Mike, this has been a great conversation. And to everyone out there, you can catch us typically every Thursday for a new episode of Liberty Lens with Mike Termod, former VP candidate for the Libertarian Party in 2024, and myself, Lowly Big John, right here at Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Until next time.